Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, August 20th. I'm Lisa Music reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Fort Bragg invites Pomo to celebrate their culture at Noyo Headlands on August 12th meeting. Vehicle use, top issue with Humboldt housing law, and Boise fire update. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. Humboldt Bay Fire swiftly responded to a boat fire at 1 Marina Way in the Eureka Public Marina at 8:59 a.m. today. The fire, which engulfed an 18-foot vessel, prompted a rapid response involving one ladder truck, three engines, and a chief officer. The first unit on the scene found black smoke billowing from the boat, indicating a significant fire. An occupant, later identified as a man in his 80s, was pulled from the vessel before the arrival of fire crews. Initial reports indicated that the individual appeared disoriented, likely due to an explosion that occurred on the boat, which threw him backward. The victim sustained minor injuries and was transported to the hospital for further treatment. Additionally, a dog that was on the boat managed to escape by jumping into the water. The animal was unharmed and is currently in the care of the Eureka Police Department's Animal Control, after initially being looked after by fish and wildlife personnel. Firefighters worked quickly to extinguish the blaze, ensuring that the boat did not sink or release hazardous substances like fuel or oil into Humboldt Bay. Their swift action prevented further environmental damage, a priority for Humboldt Bay Fire. The fire was declared under control by 9:21 a.m. The boat, however, sustained major damage and is considered a total loss, with damages estimated at $20,000. No further civilian or firefighter injuries were reported, and the cause of the fire is currently under investigation. A total of 13 firefighters and one volunteer support unit participated in the operation. Humboldt Bay Fire extended its gratitude to the Eureka Police Department, City Ambulance, and Fish and Wildlife, who assisted in managing the incident. As Humboldt County takes actions to create more housing, issues related to vehicles are being dealt with. Daniel Mintz reports.
Long-term planning on vehicle use dominated a Humboldt County Planning Commission discussion on a housing-related ordinance. At its August 15th meeting, the commission supported a draft ordinance that allows housing in commercial and industrial areas. The degree to which parking should be required or not was a top issue. Some commissioners supported a reduction or elimination of the draft ordinance's minimum parking requirements, while others warned about the impacts of not providing enough spaces. A lengthy discussion ultimately weighed the county's vehicle use reduction goals against the realities of vehicle-based lifestyle. Commissioner Peggy O'Neill said many people prefer to or need to have cars.
When you have less parking than you need, then on garbage day, it's really a nightmare because, you know, she can't even get to the trash cans because the cars are parked everywhere and they're parked all down the road. Because in reality, most people have a car, and in some cases, there's two cars per unit. And so if you already start out with half the vehicles you need for one car, and I'm not promoting cars, I'm not, and it'd be nice if everybody walked, but they don't. And they don't walk in the rain and the cold and what have you. So I think that that's a really serious concern.
Commissioner Noah Levy vouched for reducing parking requirements.
I'm not much less convinced that parking minimums do serve a purpose, or at least that they couldn't be reduced further. And let's see, I know that as written, it has an exception for projects which are within a half mile of public transit and which are above the threshold of affordability requirements. I certainly don't want to reduce. I'm very wary of taking anything away that might incentivize doing a more affordable development, but I guess my feeling is that for projects which are within a half mile of public transit, I might be sympathetic to eliminating the parking requirement or reducing it further.
Planning Director John Ford said an overall goal was to reduce vehicle use in the county, but he described it as a step-by-step process.
There's a lot to unpack when it comes to transportation in Humboldt County, because it may be that people still want to have cars, but it may be that they would also ride public transit where it's available. And so part of the thing that we're struggling with here is whether or not you're looking to do something we talk about a lot in the Planning and Building Department, which is revolutionary change or evolutionary change. And, you know, to just completely cut off parking without having the other resources in place for people to have that alternative is certainly revolutionary, but does it meet the development needs of this community as we transition away from a reliance on the automobile? And so I think the commission really should struggle with, you know, what's the ultimate vision of what Humboldt County looks like, how it functions, and then are there interim steps along the way to get there?
With six commissioners present, there was an even split on whether or not to cap parking. But Levy said the ordinance does leave room for flexibility, and though he supports a cap, he said, quote, "I'm not willing to die in that fight." In a straw poll vote, a majority of commissioners supported the draft's existing language on parking. There was less debate over the ordinance's housing density rules. Commissioners supported the draft's 30 units per acre maximum housing density. They also supported a density bonus provision that allows more units if affordability standards are met. The commission unanimously voted to recommend approval of the ordinance to the Board of Supervisors. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
In the early hours of August 15th, at approximately 3:40 a.m., the Humboldt County Sheriff's deputies responded to a report of a possible shooting near Bear River Casino in Lolita. Upon arrival, deputies spoke with two men who reported that they had been shot at while walking along Brainerd Road towards Carroll Road. The shots reportedly came from two vehicles, a silver two-door sedan and a large black pickup truck. Deputies, with the assistance from the Bear River Police Department, located the suspects at a residence on the 100 block of Carroll Road. Following a refusal to comply with commands, two suspects were taken into custody. Fernando Martinez, 26, of Visalia, was arrested for violating parole and resisting arrest. Robert Ellis, 33, of Lolita, was arrested for being a felon in possession of a firearm and possessing an unregistered firearm. Multiple firearms were recovered at the scene. Later that morning, at around 11 a.m., Madison Carroll, 23, of Lolita, was located and detained by the Bear River Police Department. Carroll was arrested for brandishing and discharging a firearm. The investigation into this incident is ongoing. Anyone with information related to this case or other criminal activities is urged to contact the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office at 707-445-7251 or the Crime Tip Line at 707-268-2539. At 7 a.m. this morning, the California Interagency Team 10 provided an update on the Boise fire burning on the Humboldt-Siskiyou County border. Overnight, crews continued their efforts to contain the Boise fire, which has now reached 12,125 acres, with 13% containment. Traffic control measures are in place on Salmon River Road, with westbound and eastbound traffic moving on the hour and half hour. A public meeting was held at 5 p.m. today at the Forks of Salmon Community Club. Today, crews were focused on strengthening containment lines and protecting structures along the Salmon River Road. Be sure to stay updated on evacuation information and weather changes that could impact fire behavior later this week. For more, here's the morning update.
Good morning, Mike Anderson, operations on the Boise Complex. This is your morning update for Tuesday, the 20th. Starting in Division Alpha, the crews today will continue to patrol, mop up, go more interior with their mop up, and begin to backhaul any excess of equipment. Division Echo will be the same thing. They'll be patrolling, mopping up, and continuing to backhaul any excess equipment. Moving over into Division Lima, crews spiked out again last night on Orleans Mountain. They're going to continue handline production from Orleans Mountain to Nordheimer Gap. Division Romeo, crews finished up handline yesterday. Today they'll be inserting back in, continuing to prep the handline that was completed yesterday and the dozer lines. They will also be starting on a contingency line coming down as well. In Division Tango, crews will be inserting again, continuing to prep along the dozer lines and making sure those are secure and adding hose lays. In Division Uniform, crews will be going in, patrolling, holding, mopping up, and continuing their hand line to tie it in with Division Tango down in Mills Camp. In Division Yankee, crews will be going in, same thing, patrolling, mopping up, and getting their lines secured, making sure that everything is going to be good. That's your morning update for Tuesday, August 20th.
For fire resource links, please visit kmud.org and click on the News tab. Turning to Mendocino, Fort Bragg invites Pomo to celebrate their culture at Noyo Headlands on August 12th. KZYX's Michelle Blackwell reports.
Fort Bragg City Council heard plans for an upcoming Pomo Biggest Time event on the Noyo Headlands, explained the three confusing sales tax items on the consent calendar, adopted a draft strategic plan, received a report on the financial status of the employee retirement program, approved new firearms for the police department, and hired consultants and engineers for three new water reservoirs at the August 12th City Council meeting. City Clerk Diana Sanchez updated the council on applications for the two open council seats. As of the initial deadline of August 9th, the city received three applications. However, as Mayor Norvell is not seeking re-election, the deadline was extended to August 14th, and Sanchez expected additional applicants. The first ever Pomo Biggest Time is scheduled for October 4th through 6th at the south end of Noyo Headlands Park. Pomo tribes from multiple counties will gather to celebrate and share their culture. According to Councilmember Lindy Peters, it is hoped that the Biggest Time will become an annual event. Councilmember Marcia Raffinen, a member of the Sherwood Valley Band of Pomo, had this to say.
My family has never, people, Indigenous Pomo has never been included, only to take the land still. And like Councilmember Lindy Peters said, it's the big times and the powwows only are held on reservations, never on city land ever. Never have been invited. Until now. Thank you. And this is, the Headlands was originally Sherwood Valley, my tribe's homeland, and that means a lot to have this biggest time ever on our old homestead land.
Three members of the public supported the event and thanked the council for opening the city and the Pomo's native lands to the tribes.
Hello, everyone. I am Maria Dolan. Hosting a significant event in Fort Bragg is crucial for fostering cultural education and enhancing community engagement. This event will serve as a platform to celebrate and share rich cultural heritage of our community. It will also be providing an opportunity for residents and visitors alike to learn about and appreciate the diverse traditions and histories that shape our identity. By bringing people together, we can strengthen community bonds, promote mutual understanding, and encourage active participation in preserving and promoting our cultural legacy. This event will not only educate, but also inspire a sense of pride and unity among all members of our communities.
The Biggest Time will include a campout, a continuous fire that will be contained in a metal fire pit, and multiple cultural activities. The consent calendar included three items regarding sales taxes, which caused confusion among the citizens and prompted Peters to pull the items so they could be explained. Two of the items were related to a sales tax that was passed by the voters in a previous election cycle. They were administrative changes requested by the state of California. Items 5C and 5D were explained by Chantel O'Neill.
So I'm going to just go ahead and basically speak to item C and D. Item 5C and D basically came about because the California Department of Tax and Fee Administration contacted us in July to let us know that they needed additional documentation from us in order to process the transaction and use tax. And so this was for the special street sales tax that the voters approved last November.
Item 5B was the adoption of an ordinance to put an additional 0.375-cent sales tax on next November's ballot. The tax was approved by the City Council at the July 8th meeting. The funds would be deposited in the general fund to cover essential services. It will not be implemented unless the voters approve it. As part of new business, the council adopted a draft strategic plan, which can be viewed on the city's website. The Fort Bragg Police Department presented an argument for an upgrade to their weapons. Chief Cervenka said this.
I just want to speak briefly about the liability. One of my main functions is to control liability as much as I can within my ability as chief. So as far as discussing the red dot sights, if you don't know what they are, they're a hologram and they put a little red dot in your field of vision. So you leave both eyes open. So when accuracy is critical and time is critical, especially in our inclement weather we have here and darkness, by the officer being able to leave both eyes open all the time and just see that red dot where the threat is, they can have that last split second to see if the suspect drops the knife and they don't need to pull the trigger. Or they can see possibly that extra split second that it's a cell phone and not a weapon at all. So it reduces liability in that regard because it increases accuracy.
They also requested that each officer be assigned their own rifle, which is adjusted to their grip, and to purchase off-duty guns for police staff. The council approved the purchase, which was covered in the current budget. The three water reservoirs that are planned for a property off Summers Lanes moved forward. Diane O'Connor.
Appreciate your time. I'm really happy to be bringing this item to you today. I actually have two items. And so this has to do with the property that we bought in a year and a half since we purchased the six parcels totaling 582 acres adjacent to Highway 20. And the primary objective was to construct three reservoirs of the approximate size of the Summers Lane Reservoir. The location is convenient to infrastructure, provides gravity flow to our treatment plant. But while being an ideal location for the reservoirs, it does have some very sensitive natural communities that have been mapped by California Department of Fish and Wildlife. And therefore, the construction of the reservoir site will require mitigation of any impacts to those species.
The City Council approved a contract with Rincon Consultants to develop an environmental impact report for the project. Separately, they approved a contract with Waterworks Engineers to design the reservoirs. For KZYX News, I'm Michelle Blackwell.
In state news, Mayor London, Breed, and San Francisco officials tout success of surveillance drone program. Audie McAfee from KPFA brings you the details.
Unlike other big city police departments, the SFPD has been without air support such as a helicopter for 24 years. Helicopters are routinely used for patrols, monitoring, and pursuit operations. City officials say overhead surveillance and license reading cameras have all sorts of upsides when it comes to public safety.
Benefits include faster response times, situational awareness, tactical tools, more precision, de-escalation, more information to formulate a plan, officer safety is enhanced, avoiding unnecessary police chases, and integration with other technologies such as our flock cameras that we are putting up around the city.
That's Interim San Francisco Police Chief Bill Scott. Chief Scott says the six drones now in use citywide are phase one of the drone program with more on the way. Police officials say they have policies in place to ensure drones are used responsibly with safeguards to protect public privacy. Chief Scott says the drones are paying dividends.
Including a sexual assault suspect that was arrested, several auto burglary suspects that were arrested, 4th of July mayhem, and we've also arrested violent and wanted fugitives with help of our drone technology.
Mayor London Breed pushed for Proposition E to be placed on this year's ballot. Proposition E would make changes to drone use so that officers can spend less time on things like record keeping and other administrative tasks and allow local officers to get more involved in the communities they patrol. Mayor Breed says the drones have helped the city record some of its lowest crime rates in years.
It has been a game changer for our city. Last year, San Francisco saw the lowest crime rate we've seen in 10 years, not including the pandemic. This year, we're even 34% lower than we were in 2023.
Breed said the drone program is part of a multifaceted approach to cutting down on crime that includes services for people who could be tempted to turn to crime.
We have not abandoned our values of giving people second chances, providing a robust amount of programs that will get people on the right path, and working with different organizations and communities in order to help people.
According to city statistics, violent crime was down 12% and property crime was down 32% in San Francisco in the first 3 months of 2024. Officials at the meeting said drones are helpful as a deterrent to crime. Brooke Jenkins is San Francisco's district attorney.
And this is the beginning of being able to send a message that if you do things in our city that are illegal, you will be caught.
San Franciscans voted in favor of Proposition E in March. For KPFA, I'm Audie McAfee.
In national news, Republican candidate Donald Trump gave a speech on economic policy, attempting to shift away from personal attacks. However, he quickly returned to criticizing Vice President Kamala Harris and discussing his relationships with leaders like Russia's Vladimir Putin. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
Republican leaders and the Trump campaign have been pushing for presidential candidate Donald Trump to recalibrate his message, focusing on policy instead of personal attacks. The results of that attempt were on display Thursday as Trump spoke at a rally in Asheville, North Carolina.
Now, this is a little bit different day because this isn't a rally. This is, we're talking about a thing called the economy. They wanted to do a speech on the economy. A lot of people are very devastated by what's happened with inflation and all of the other things. So we're doing this as a intellectual speech. You're all intellectuals today. Today we're doing it, and we're doing it right now. And it's very important. They say it's the most important subject. I think crime is right there. I think the border is right there personally. We have a lot of important subjects because our country has become a third world nation.
Trump promised on his first day in office he would sign an executive order directing cabinet secretaries and agency heads to work to defeat inflation. He also repeated his drill, baby, drill mantra, and he promised to immediately eliminate, he says, every single job-killing regulation the Biden-Harris administration has created. But most of his remarks on economic policy were a little less specific.
Vote Trump and your incomes will soar, your savings will grow, young people will be able to afford a home, and we will bring back the American dream bigger, better, and stronger than ever before.
Trump drew a contrast between the economic outlook under a Harris administration versus a Trump administration, while also taking credit for good economic news under the current Biden administration.
If Harris wins this election, the result will be a Kamala economic crash. A 1929-style depression. 1929. When I win the election, we will immediately begin a brand-new Trump economic boom. It'll be a boom. We're going to turn this country around so fast. Many people say that the only reason the stock market is up is because people think I am going to win. Did you ever hear that?
But in his 75-minute speech, the economic policy, such as it was, seemed almost an afterthought to some other pet issues, such as the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, which Trump tried unsuccessfully to repeal when he was president.
By contrast, I'm going to keep the Affordable Care Act unless we can do something much better. We'll keep it. It stinks. It's not good.
He contrasted the Republican Party, which he calls the party of common sense, to the Democratic presidential ticket of Harris and Tim Walz.
But they've never held a private sector job in their entire professional careers, and it's no wonder they're both socialists. They're actually beyond socialists. I think they skipped over socialists.
He also warned of a Harris presidency and how it would affect the world's view of the United States.
You don't have to imagine what a Harris presidency would look like. You're living through the misery right now, except it will get worse, and you're paying the price, a price like nobody's ever paid, and we're disrespected all over the world as a country. We were respected before. Putin respected us. President Xi of China respected us. Kim Jong-un of North Korea respected us. We were respected by everybody in the world. Today we're being laughed at.
Trump has boasted of his relations with the authoritarian leaders of Russia, China, and North Korea, and also with Hungary's leader, Viktor Orban.
Prime Minister of Hungary, very tough man, strong man, very, you know, somebody that I always got along. I get along with the strong ones. I don't get along with the weak ones. Isn't that sad? That's a personality defect. No, the tough ones, but the tough ones are the ones we have to worry about, right? It's a good thing.
Trump's veering off message has caused consternation among some Republicans, but Trump's running mate, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance, defended Trump's style.
That we'd much rather have an American president who is who he is, who's willing to offend us, who's willing to tell us the truth, who isn't a fake who hides behind a teleprompter, but lets the American people see exactly who he is.
Vance was speaking at his own news conference earlier Thursday in Michigan. One reporter asked Vance whether he agreed that Trump should focus more on policy rather than personal attacks on Harris. Vance called the question insulting to our president, presumably meaning Trump, but he did give an answer.
So I think that Donald Trump has earned the right to run the campaign that he wants to run. And look, if you listen to what Donald J. Trump says, if you look at what I say, we are prosecuting the case against Kamala Harris on policy.
But at his own rally, Trump prosecuted the case in other terms.
For nearly 4 years, Kamala has crackled as the American economy has burned. What happened to her laugh? I haven't heard that laugh in about a week. That's why they keep her off the stage. That's why she's disappeared. That's the laugh of a crazy person, I will tell you, if you haven't known it. It's a crazy. She's crazy.
Trump did, though, end with a bit more on policy, since, after all, Trump had said it was an intellectual speech.
And this is how we will end the era of inflation, mayhem, and misery under Kamala and Crooked Joe, and unleash economic abundance for Americans of every race, religion, color, and creed.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Julian Jackson. And thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Michelle Blackwell, Audie McAfee, and Christopher Martinez. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org, SoundCloud, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you can see related stories, links, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Music.